Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, what's cracking? This is Darren McDuffie, affectionately known as the Fat Man, because I help you become perfectly healthy and toned. And welcome back to another episode of Fat Man Radio. Tonight, I'm actually doing what I call a takeover show, where I'm actually giving the host duties over to a really good friend of mine. We do a podcast together. Her name is Diane Kaiser, and we do the Wellness Warrior podcast together. So I'm going to bring Diane on, and I'm going to actually be in the hot seat answering some questions here. And if you want to call in, you can call in and ask questions. The number is 646-716-9371. Again, the number is 646-716-9371. So let me bring Diane on. Diane, are you there?
I'm here, Darren. How's it going, man?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Thank you so much for actually taking over the host duties tonight and giving me a break, so to speak.
Ah, it's my pleasure. We help each other out. You did for me last week, too, remember?
Yeah. I did your webinar, which was an excellent webinar on food sensitivities. So I was glad to help you out, and I'm glad that you're helping me out tonight. And I was just talking about our Wellness Warrior podcast, and we've had some issues with Skype as of late. And I think we've actually figured those out. So for those of you out there, I think I posted this on Facebook earlier where Microsoft bought Skype. So now all of us Mac users are having problems with Skype. So we think we figured that one out, and it'll allow Diane and I to start actually getting our podcast out there without so many audio technicalities. So I'm hoping that we can get through that.
I hope so, too. Amen to that.
Yeah, I was really frustrated the other night. I think you had your friend on, and she was talking about autism, and I was just so thoroughly frustrated. The thing kept, like, repeating our voices, and I was like, what the heck is going on? And I just said to myself, I said, this didn't start happening until we did that recent update of Skype. And then last night I stayed up to, like, midnight really trying to figure out what was going on, and I just so happened to go on the Skype site, and a lot of people were saying, oh, I'm having these issues with Skype now that it has this new update. So I was like, it's got to be Skype. It's got to be Skype. So I downloaded it.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, could you imagine if, like, we came as human beings, we woke up every morning and there was, like, a little reminder that we had to download or update something in our system, and it was, like, our hormones and our digestion. Could you imagine that? And then we would, like, blame our relationship problems on update problems.
Yeah, I know a lot of people would probably get away with that one. A lot of people would miss out because they would get to download stuff. So,
no.
So I know exactly what you're saying.
I'm having a bad day. I forgot.
Yeah. So I know exactly what you're saying. So, I just wanted to share that with the audience because a lot of times it's very magical, the fact that I live in South Florida and Diane lives in Southern California, and we can even get on here and record a podcast. You know, we don't have to be in person. You know, her and I just go through this thing on my Mac called GarageBand, and I record it, and then I edit it, and then I put it up on iTunes for everyone to download. And just speaking of that, the Wellness Warrior show is on iTunes. That's the one I do with Diane. And also this show, Fat Man Radio, is on iTunes as well. And one of the things I wanted to stress, and this is how I started learning about my health, and Diane, I know that you do the same thing, is I'm constantly listening to other people's podcasts because I'm learning different things from other people. And that's the way that you learn. You have to be open to it, and you can't be closed off, because I learn something from everybody. I mean, I've learned things from Diane by just talking to her or listening to her on podcast, things that I didn't know. I listened to Chris Kresser. I listened to Frida. I'm not going to say Frida's last name because I'll probably botch it. But she has a podcast as well. And there's a lot of people out there that are have really good nutrition podcasts. Sean Croxton is probably why I actually started Fat Man Radio, just by listening to him. And I got the motivation to move on and just start my own show. So just wanted to stress that to you, is that if you really want to be healthy, you have to be open to learning, and you just can't be closed off, because there's a lot of things that we think or we believe that we've been told, and those things aren't really necessarily true. Yeah. So, no. All right. So I'm done. I'm handing it over to you. Shoot, ask me whatever you want to ask me.
Well, Darren, I think it's important what you just indicated about our journey, and that's actually how we found each other, was the Underground Wellness Podcast by Sean Coxton. And I'm listening to at least one podcast a day to keep up with the up-and-coming health topics, and just to even learn some of the older ones that I'm not aware of just yet. And I think that there's a lot of idle time that we have during our day. We say that we don't have enough time to do things, and in the car or on the way to the gym or in the gym, we could be listening to things like this. And that's what I hope for your podcast, and that's what I hope for our podcast too, because you say they don't have enough time, but there is some time if you really find it to multitask. So without further ado, this show is about you, so we're going to get into that.
Good.
What is something that you can tell us about your journey, Darren? Because I know your journey, but I want your listeners to hear about your journey and what got you here into health.
Yeah, my journey is kind of long, and I'm going to take people back to the very beginning, because I think everything that I'm going to say is very important. So for those of you out there, there are some people probably on the podcast that know me ever since I was a kid. If you're from the hometown that I'm from a little small town called Sumter, South Carolina. If you blink, you'd probably miss it. We're about 30 minutes away from the capital of South Carolina, which is Columbia, South Carolina. So when I was growing up, I was actually a really skinny kid, and I had this complex about being skinny. I hated for people to call me slim. People would call me, the point guard from my high school basketball team would call me Heavy D, which was, you know, a play on words. And I just hated being skinny. And I remember asking my mom one day, I said, Mom, will I ever gain weight? And she said, once you get into your 20s, Darren, she said, you're going to start gaining weight. So I didn't believe that. I was one of those people that you probably hate. I could eat anything and everything and never gain any weight. So in relation to that, what I would do is I would gather up my money, I would go to the bodybuilding or the supplement store, and I would get these weight gain shakes. And I would OD on those weight gain shakes. I would drink them with milk, and all it would do, I would never gain any weight. All it would do was give me gas. So I wasn't successful in gaining any weight. So to give everybody a visual, when I graduated from high school, I was 6'5", and I weighed 165 pounds. I was rail thin.
Crazy.
Yeah, I was rail thin. So this continued on through college. I think when I graduated college, I grew 2 more inches. I was 6'7", and I graduated college at 6'7", 177 pounds. That was it. So that was when I graduated. I graduated at about 21 years of age. And then about 24, 25 years old, that's when I started gaining weight, just like my mom told me. So I started gaining the weight. I went from 177 to 180, 185, 190, and 195 to 200. So I was happy about that. I was like, oh, I'm starting to gain weight. I'm really happy about this, because I was just tired of being skinny and tired of people calling me slim. So let's fast forward, because I want to get everybody to the whole story. So I got into my 30s, and I really started gaining weight. And in my 30s, I remember going home, and I went home to visit my mom. And this was probably the early part of 2004. So I went home to visit my mom. And my routine when I used to visit my mom was I would stay for a couple of days. And I was living in Florida at the time. I would just stay for a couple of days, get up really early in the morning, because there's something about me with driving in the hot sun during the day. It's like I'm always better in the morning with driving. So I would get up about 5 o'clock in the morning, pack up the car, and, you know, get on the road. It's about a 30-minute drive to get back to Interstate 95 to come back down here to Florida from where I'm from. So that particular morning in 2004, I got up, did my normal routine, packed the car up, came in to give my mom a kiss and a hug. And my mom was crying, and I was like, man, what is going on? Because you have to understand something. My mom dropped me off at college. My mom used to drop me off at summer camps, and this woman never cried about anything, never cried about anything. And this particular morning, she just started crying, like, it's, I mean, bawling, actually bawling. And I'm like, what is going on? That previous year, my mom had been diagnosed with cancer, with breast cancer. And I hugged her and I got in the car and I couldn't keep it together. That whole 30-minute ride to get back to Interstate 95, I was crying. And I'm like, I couldn't figure out what was actually going on, Diane. And drove back down here to Florida. Everything was fine. And then about November of 2005 is when I get a call, and I get a call to come home. But before that, I had spent a couple of years in the pharmaceutical industry, and during that time in the pharmaceutical industry, I had gained a lot of weight. I went from being someone that you describe as an ectomorph to someone who was actually overweight and out of shape. I went from being 6'7", 177 pounds to almost 250 pounds. And if you go on my blog and you see a picture I took when I was on a cruise, I was just miserable. I couldn't figure out what was wrong. I had no energy. I used to try to play pickup basketball during that time with my friends, and I couldn't even make it down the court. I was just embarrassed by it, embarrassed by the whole thing. So during this whole time, I had had all that weight, those weight issues. I lacked the motivation to do anything about that. So November 2005, I get this call from my aunt, and my aunt says, Darren, you need to come home. And I'm like, well, what's going on? So I get on a plane, and I fly into Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, I drive into Sumter, which is about an hour or so trip. And I get there, and my mom's in the hospital. So I don't really know what's going on. I just think that my mom got sick. I knew that the cancer had come back, and I thought that she was sick. And I just thought that, okay, she's sick. This is just routine. She's going to be okay, and she's going to get out. So that was the first week. And I remember that first week very vividly because my sister and I were taking turns staying with my mom over the time, you know, over a hospital stay. So one night I was staying with my mom, and I get kind of emotional when I tell this, but I will tell it. I was staying with her, and it was about 2-3 o'clock in the morning, and my mom, I heard her moving around, and I'm like a nervous wreck because I, like any little movement, I'm like, what if something happens? What am I going to do? I'm like, I'm not a nurse. I'm not a doctor. I'm not anything. So I heard her stirring in the bed, in the hospital bed next to me, and I'm trying to sleep on this little, I don't know if you've ever stayed in the hospital, they have those little tiny freaking couches. So you can imagine me being 6'7", trying to sit in one of these little chairs and go to sleep, and it just wasn't happening. So I was just awake. So about 2-3 o'clock in the morning, I hear my mom, and she says, Darren, she said, can you come here? And I go around to her bedside, and she looks me straight in the eye, and she says, Darren, she says, do you think I'm going to die? And I said, Mom, I said, you know, you're going to be okay. I said, this is just routine. You're going to be okay. So that first week, everything was fine. And then the second week, my mom just started really going downhill. And it was such a rapid change that I don't know what happened. I just like, how can she be talking one week and be laughing and spending time with the family? And then the next week, they put my mom on a morphine drip. And I remember the last day, the day before, the day that she passed away. And my sister and I were very tired because both of us were spending time with her in the hospital. And my aunt came up and she said, why don't you go home? And she said, why don't you guys need to get some rest? So I described Sumter as a small town. When I say small town, we left the hospital. It literally took us about 5 minutes to get back to my mom's house. We pull into the carport. I get a call on my cell phone and my aunt says, your mom passed away. And I knew that that was my mom's way that she wanted to go. She didn't want my sister and I to see her go. And she was always very protective. My mom was always very strong, and she was always a brave person. That's some of the traits that I wish that, you know, I think I have those traits, but not to the effect that my mom had those traits. My mom was a very strong woman. And I don't think I would have been here and been in the position that I am if it wasn't for her, because I used to do a lot of crappy stuff and hang around with the wrong people. And my mom really had a time straightening me out. But needless to say, I graduated from college. My sister graduated from college, and she's a registered nurse. But during that time, we went back up to the hospital, and I went in the hospital room, and I saw my mom not breathing. And I said, something's not right. Something just didn't feel right to me. And I don't know who the listeners are, who they believe in. If you say God, if you say the universe, or whatever you want to say, I just said at that moment, I said, God, I said, could you please bring the truth into my life? And no sooner than I did that, I left the hospital. I went back to my mom's house, and I sat on the couch, and I was looking at TV, and there was a commercial, and I remember it very clearly. That commercial was Kevin Trudeau, and he had a book called Natural Cures They Don't Want You to Know About. And I took that as a sign. I'm one of those people that if something keeps coming at me or if I ask for something, I'm always ready to receive that. And I took it as a sign. I said, I got to get this book. So I immediately ordered the book, and I had it delivered to Florida. So when I got back home, I knew it was there. And when I cracked open that book, I read that book from cover to cover, probably in about 3 to 4 hours. And everything Kevin Trudeau said in that book was absolutely true. He attacked the pharmaceutical industry. I knew about the pharmaceutical industry because I was in there. And everything in that book is absolutely true. People ask me, okay, well, what do I read, or what do you recommend? And that's one of the books I recommend, that Natural Cures They Don't Want You to Know About. And he had a part two to that book as well. But that's the Bible. I have a copy of it sitting right here in my office right now. The other book is, I interviewed Raymond Francis not too long ago on the show, Never Be Sick Again. And that's a really good book to kind of get the basis of your health. But those words expressed to me by my mom changed my life forever. I became one of these people who was a truth seeker. And I spent time reading everything I could get my hands on to read about health. I just spent time reading about that. And one of the things that I found out through all of that reading was I just wanted to be kind of versed on cancer. And for the listeners out there, I'll tell you something about cancer. My mom didn't tell me this. She told my aunt, and she told my aunt not to tell us. But what happened with my mom was the cancer metastasized into her liver and spread throughout her body, and that was the reason why she died. And for those listeners that are out there, once cancer metastasizes in your body, there's nothing conventional medicine can do for you. Nothing. They couldn't do anything for my mom. There's nothing alternative medicine can do for you at that time. But the thing about people is that they're so willing to go the conventional route and do chemo and poison their body, because that's what they believe in. That's what they've been taught to believe in. But meanwhile, you have these people out here that are doing alternative therapy, Gerson therapy, and they're actually, and I know I might get in trouble for this, but the hell with it, I'm going to say it. They're actually curing cancer. There are people out there who have cancer cured, and cancer can be, you can manage cancer. There's no reason why people should still believe that cancer is incurable. It's incurable because there's people out there that want to make money on it. And sorry for ranting on, but, that's my journey, and that's how I actually got started in the health and nutrition.
Oh, this is everybody's journey is beautiful, and talking about your mother, and I remember the first time you told me about this, how I even got teary-eyed just listening to it and thinking that, gosh, what would any of us do if we had a close family member who had cancer? And I know there's so many people who come to me and they say, Diane, I've got a family member with cancer. What should I do? And, of course, we have to be so careful, Darren. Like you just said, the FDA is a big, mighty, mean group of people that if we try to say anything in the natural side of things that threatens their ability to make money, then we can get in big trouble. So for us spreading this word of health, we take a lot of risk, and I commend you for that, because it's not easy to come out and go against the grain, which is what both of us are doing. So I wanted to ask you that you guys had never done chemo with your mom, or at what point did it get to that if she was just so serious she couldn't do chemo?
No, one of the things that my mom expressed to me, I went home one time, my mom said, Darren, she said, I don't ever do chemo again. My mom was perfectly healthy. My mom was 5'9", 5'10", That's where I probably get my height from in my family. But very, very healthy individual until she came down with the cancer. And then when she got chemo, obviously she lost her hair. But she also lost the ability to use her hands. She was having hand problems. And this is directly correlated with doing chemo. So she lost the function in her hands. They had to put her on Coumadin to thin her blood out. And she was on all these medications. The very sad thing about it is that my mom had saved up a lot of money for her retirement. And she had to use just about all of that money to, you know, buy these drugs. And I remember standing out in the hallway with a doctor, and you know, just before she passed away, and he's like, "Well, you know," he said, "Mr. McDuffie, we have one more experimental drug that we can put your mom on, but it's going to cost X amount of dollars." And I said, "No," I said, "My mom told me she did not want to do chemo anymore. If my mom said she didn't want to do something, that meant she was in pain, and my mom was a strong woman, and that meant to me that she was ready to go." And I honored her wish. I just said, "No, we're not going to do anything else." I said, "We're not going to do anything else," to the doctor. And I walked away from him.
You know what I heard the other day on a podcast is that the number one reason for bankruptcy these days, and I'm sure you can guess it.
It's medical. It's medical reasons.
Yep. Medical bills, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So why not, and I know this is part of the journey that you're on right now and some of the things that you impart, that you're hoping to impart on your listeners. So thanks for sharing that, Darren, with your mom, because everybody has their story, and it, sometimes it takes loss for people to really start to see the lighter end of the tunnel. And we're going to get into that. So I'm wanting to ask you that later, but right now I know that I'm looking outside, I'm looking at the clouds, it's October 3rd. Why do you hate the month of October? Because you know what? It's my birthday month, Darren.
Well, I'll like it because it's your birthday month. But the reason why I just really dislike October is because, and I posted one of my old blog posts from my women's blog on, and it's titled "I Hate Effin' Pink." And the reason why is because October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, so you're going to start seeing people wearing pink. You're going to see the pink ribbons, all the walks, the Susan B. Komen for the Cure walks, and I will not be in another walk. I will not be in another run. I will not donate another dime to the cancer industry because it's just a big song and dance. Because these doctors and these people know what cures cancer, and the very institutions that are saying that they want to help are perpetuating a fraud. You have Susan B. Komen Foundation is putting their stamp of approval on products, cosmetic product, lipstick, perfume, all this kind of stuff, and this stuff contains the very cancer-causing ingredients that will give you cancer, and they are promoting this stuff. So why,
Darren,
if you know this stuff, why are you promoting it to people, and why are you asking people to give to an industry that's already more than a billion-dollar industry, Diane? And they're asking people to give to them, and when are we going to see a cure? They just keep stringing people along. Meanwhile, you've got nonprofit agencies out there like the Gerson Therapy, where they're treating people with cancer and having success by having them do juicing and doing coffee enemas, which I know you do those. I do those every Saturday myself. So I'm just wondering why people keep – I know that there are people that there want to honor their deceased loved ones, but the way that I honor my mom is I don't compete, I don't participate in none of these walks or none of these runs because it's not the truth. The truth is out there, but people tend to get caught up in all this propaganda, and it's not the truth. And that's why I don't like the month of October, because it starts this whole pink thing. You see football players wearing pink cleats, and everything is about breast cancer awareness. If you want to make people aware, tell them what the hell is causing cancer. Tell them that it's the toxins that we're taking in our food. It's the parabens in the cosmetics. It's all of this stuff. But you're not telling them that. You're just saying, okay, donate this money, and we're going to keep trying to find a cure. They already know what it is. They know what it is without a doubt.
You know, one of the things that you were going on your beautiful rant that you just said, and it's totally true. You just dropped a hell of a lot of truth bombs, and I 100% support and back each and every word that you said. I remember I saw something recently. There was some kind of an image. I was doing a search for a blog that I was writing, And I came across this image, and it was some kind of an expo where there was a booth that there was a Susan B. Komen, and they were giving out some stuff. And then there was right next to, in that same booth area, was Monsanto. So there was some kind of, literally, there was like a container that was holding something was Monsanto, and then whatever was in the container was labeled Susan B. Komen. And I thought, what a perfectly built team on making a bunch of money and just completely blanketing and put a huge curtain over the eyes of the truth for Americans. What a perfect partnership that is, just to make a lot of money and make people sicker. Without sounding like too much of a conspiracy, this is actually true. This is really going on.
Yeah, if you go on and you research, and I've done this, I'm a researcher. So if you see something on my blog, or if you see me saying something, you best believe I researched it. So if those of you out there listening, you want to research, Google Susan B. Komen Foundation, and you will find that Susan B. Komen Foundation has ties to the pharmaceutical industry. They've actually have things invested in the money invested in the pharmaceutical industry. So how can you? You can't serve two masters, Diane. You can't say you want to be part of the cure, but yet you're funding the very industry that is saying that there's no cure for this, for this type of disease. And everywhere you look, if you look at all of this stuff and if you start to follow the money, you will always find the trail. There's a hot trail, and all people have to do is find the money. And for anybody out there, people come up to me all the time. They're like, well, how do I get healthy? How do I get healthy? I said, pay attention to the money. When you find out where the money's coming from, because there are people out there who look at us as human beings, as individuals, as nothing but dollar signs. That's all it is. That's all we are to them, dollar signs. Okay, you get cancer. I'm going to throw you in this program and get you chemo. Chemo drugs are like some of the most expensive drugs out there, and most people don't have insurance. Or if they do have insurance, insurance only pays for a little bit of that, and then it has to come out of pocket. And that's exactly what happened to my mom. My mom died broke. When I went to settle her estate after that, my mom still owed the hospital about $60,000. She was broke, and she had spent all of her retirement. So how can you help someone? How can you help someone if they spend up all their money and they still end up passing away? And the really strange thing about cancer is that they have this thing called survival rate, and I believe it's 3 or 4 years. If you survive 3 to 4 years after they give you chemo, they consider that a success. How can you consider that a success if that person is not living a full life? They don't go on. They live 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years down the road. How can you say it's a success if they are only living 2, 3 years after they've gotten chemo? It's a skewed principle, in my opinion.
No. As we were talking about this, Darren, I pulled something up. When you said Google this, I actually Googled Monsanto and Susan B. Komen together, and I ran into an article that indicated that Monsanto is a big sponsor for Susan B. Komen Race for the Cure, and they call it Partners in Biotech Terrorism. This is a really interesting fact for those who are listening, and this is another reason why, gosh, I wish they would move this month this whole March to a different month. It's ruining my birthday. On a national level, the Susan G. Komen Foundation raked in $342 million in 2012, and the CEO, Nancy, she got $685,000 in her salary, which doesn't count bonuses. When you look at their performance, Komen's fundraising efficiency was listed at a paltry 12 cents, meaning that for every dollar that they raised, only 12 cents was applied to quote-unquote cancer research.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh.
And that's for people. If people are willing to go out there and seek the information that's out there, everything is open book now on the Internet, and you can find anything. The thing that kills me about people, Diane, is that people are going and Google what 2 Chainz or R. Kelly or who else is out there? Gwen Stefani had for breakfast.
Twerking.
Yeah, and what Gwen Stefani eats for breakfast, but they won't go on and Google and find out stuff about their health. And that's one of the frustrating things for me when it comes to health and nutrition. It's just like the information is out there. All you got to do is just Google it or go to the library and start picking up books. And you will know the truth. People say, I get confused with the truth. If you ask for the truth, you will get the truth. And that's what I did a long time ago. I said, hey, let me get the truth. It's no black or white. There's the truth, and then there's a lie. And most people are living under that lie.
Yeah, I think it's potentially a little bit of an insert here, is that you got to be careful what you Google, too, because if you Google and you run into the government advice and what the FDA says, they're going to tell you to eat according to the food pyramid, and they're going to tell you that diet soda is good for kids to prevent diabetes and stuff like that. So I think a good start is to listen to your podcast, listen to my podcast, my and your podcast, as well as Sean Coxon's. That's where you're going to find some truth, and then you can go out there and experience it yourself. But we're talking about cancer here as a theme, and I wanted to know, because this is something I asked you earlier, why do you think that illness is a blessing? Because I've heard this from a lot of people. They were happy that they got cancer. Why would you say that it's a blessing?
Yeah, it's because, like, I was listening to Paul Check one time, and he said, for Paul Check, those of you who don't know Paul Check is like this really one of the guys that I kind of look up to, because he's a forward thinker, and he's a little bit more like myself. Like, I tell it how it is. If you don't like it, then tough. But I was listening to him one time, and he said that when you are ill or when you become sick, that's your guru. That's your inner guru coming out in you, and it's true.
Yeah.
When you get an illness or you get sick, your body is trying to tell you something. And I know people who are constantly sick all the time, Diana. If whatever comes out, if it's a stomach virus, if it's a cold, if it's the flu, they always get it. Your body is trying to tell you something, and you need to wake up and heed that warning, because for most of us, it's like we got to get hit with a freaking sledgehammer before we wake up. We got to get hit with that sledgehammer before we wake up. And you're not always going to get hit with that sledgehammer. If you may have that warning of that sledgehammer, but there's a lot of people out there who don't get that warning. I had a coworker that I used to work with a couple of years ago, cool guy. And, you know, he was always laughing, always jovial with everybody. Everybody liked him. We came to work one morning. Apparently, he had a heart attack, and his wife thought he just had, you know, had gas or something in his chest. He laid on the bed and ended up passing away. There are things that will tell you, you know, what's going on with you, and that's why illness is a blessing. If you're one of those people out there that are listening and you're always getting sick, your body is trying to tell you something, and you need to wake up and say, okay, well, what can I do? What can I change? What can I start listening to these podcasts and find out, you know, what's going on with me? Because that's the serious thing. It's illness is a blessing. It's just asking you to wake up and say, hey, you know what, let's take control of this situation.
Yeah, and I've heard that a lot from people before. I used to get sick all the time. I was one of them. I used to get sick like every other month, and I just thought it was just part of who I was, and that's what Americans did, is we were just getting sicker and sicker, and until I took real control of my health and stopped putting a blanket over the check engine light and actually listened to the check engine light and brought my hood under the into my own research and took the bull at the horns. So, Darren, what would you say, I mean, because there's so much overwhelming information out there, I would think that people are getting a little bombarded and confused and paralyzed almost, like information paralysis. So how would you say we can make health easy?
I think you got to take it in steps. I know for me, this journey, and it's a constant journey. It's like I'm learning something new every day. I was just reading an article on iron and the fact that we don't need as much iron in our bodies as we think we do. And the whole thing about anemia, which affects women because women have the menstrual cycle. So, I mean, I was reading that. I was like, oh, this is something I don't really know. So I delved, you know, a little bit deeper into that. I'm always reading stuff. But when I started this, I just started little by little. It's like a baby just taking baby steps. And I would incorporate just different things. I said, okay, well, hey, you know what? I'm really liking this juicing thing. I'm going to buy a juicer. And then I bought a juicer. Started doing that. And then I said, okay, well, I'm reading about water and the fact that chlorine and fluoride are in our water, and I'm taking showers in this stuff. Okay, I'm going to go out and buy a shower filter. I didn't try to do everything at once, because I think what happens with people, and I noticed from personal, you know, being in fitness, is that when you try to do everything so drastically or try to incorporate everything at one time, you get overwhelmed. And for the majority of people, when they get overwhelmed, the tendency is to sit in one place and not do anything. So I would say take your health step by step. Listen to one podcast a day. Okay, you listen to that podcast. Take one thing from that podcast that you can put into your life that works comfortably for you. Like for me, when I'm riding to work in the morning, I got my iPod plugged in and I'm listening to a podcast. And that's just no effort at all for me because I'm driving to work. I have a 30-minute commute to get down to Miami. And for 30 minutes, I'm just doing that. And I can take little things out of those podcasts and say, oh, you know what, maybe I want to do some more research on this. You don't have to make this hard, and most people do. They make it hard by the nutrition aspect of it. We all know what to eat at some point. Because, I mean, who didn't tell you to eat vegetables when you were younger? I mean, it's just a matter of putting the stuff together and also applying it. You know, I meet so many people who said that I'm going to try to do this and I'm going to try. Try is, I hate that word. Because
me too.
When
me
you
too.
Try to do something, it's always on the other side of failure. It's always on the other side of failure because when you – when you look at someone, Diane, that says, I try to do something, when you look at them, you ask them, and they say, and they fail, and they don't do it, you ask them, you say, okay, and they'll look at you and they say, I tried. No. Don't try, do.
Try don't around try. To die, like death.
Yeah. But I would
don't
just
try,
say,
just do.
I would say to make health easy, you just need to take it in little bites. You can't eat an elephant in one whole bite. You got to do it, you know, bit by bit. So take a little bit, chew a little bit, digest that, chew a little bit more, digest that. And that's how I did it, and that's how I came to this point. I know you've been studying nutrition for quite a long time. I've been studying this stuff since 2005. And like I said, I'm still learning new stuff, but I made it easy enough, and I build upon the things that I learned. It didn't come all at one time. It's just like, okay, learn about estrogen. Oh, estrogen and hormones, and then I kept building on the stuff that I learned until the point where you can see me get on YouTube and make videos and halfway know what I'm talking about now. So,
it
doesn't come, and that's what, and people, you have to just take an active involvement in it. You can't just look at TV and say, okay, well, so-and-so said that this is this and spend 2 minutes a day on it. If you want to actively know about your body, you have to spend the time to do that. You have to spend the time to do it.
Yeah, we so many of us look for the easy way out, and we get overwhelmed, and we're just like, this is just too much, and we think that it needs to be perfect. We're never going to be perfect. So I think that's where the evolution of the word try comes from, because people think they need to be perfect in order to say that they're doing something. And I think it just, like you said, it needs to just be that we're doing this 100%. We're doing it as much as we can for right now, and we're holding ourselves accountable to it. Because if you're saying try, you're not being held accountable because you're not there yet. You're just mm-hmm. dabbling with it. You just have a little bit of your foot in the water, or like you said, you have just maybe chewed the elephant's ear and not the foot yet. I don't like that one. Let's talk about petting elephants. I don't like to eat elephants. I'm a vegetarian. No, I'm not. Just kidding. So, you know, if this, like we talked about, Darren, already, that there's so much information that's out there, do you think that that's one of the reasons why so many people are overweight?
No, I don't think that that's the reason why. I think that the real reason why is that if you look at obesity to me is just inflammation. And that inflammation comes from eating processed food, eating things that aren't really native to our body. So what's really not native to our body? Okay, is an Oreo native to our body? That's something a chemist went in a lab and invented, and invented that to taste good for you and to make you addicted to it. And that's a lot of what's going on. A lot of people are addicted to foods because they're eating processed foods that have been synthesized in a lab to make them addictive and to make them taste great. If you look at Doritos, they're full of MSG, they taste great, people love them. But what's happening with this stuff is that it's making the body inflamed. It's providing inflammation. And for those of you out there, inflammation is the start of all disease. It's the start of diabetes. It's the start of cancer. It's the start of heart disease. Whenever you have constant inflammation in your body, that's the start of all the disease. And that inflammation is coming from what we're eating, processed food. There are not a lot of people out there that are eating real food. Just for an example, where I work, every Friday they have a, I call them roach coaches. They call them lunch trucks. But every Friday, before every Friday, our HR guy sends out a an email to let us know that the lunch trucks are there. And every freaking day I bring my lunch. And the reason why I bring my lunch is because I know what's in it. When you are getting your lunch off a lunch truck or going to a restaurant, I go to restaurants sometimes, and I'm very picky about that. You know, we only go to certain places. But when you go to a restaurant, when you go to fast food places, you have no idea what's in your food. You don't know what's in your food. And for the majority of us, we're just eating things blindly. And we've become, and I mentioned this on your webinar the other night, we've become boffs, or what I call victims of food, where, you know, nobody can distinguish what's real and what's not real. And for me, I would say I eat real food 98% of the time, and I know that you do as well. But you have people out there who they're 5-6 days a week, they're in McDonald's, they're in Wendy's, or they're at TGI Fridays. And you have people out there who don't ever cook. They don't even know how to cook. And if you don't know how to cook, I'm telling you, you're in sad shape, because you are taking your life in your own hands, so to speak, because you're constantly eating stuff that's been designed to be cheap and fast. And cheap food, yeah. I heard Sally Fallon say this. Sally Fallon is the head of the Weston A. Price Foundation, and it stuck with me on a podcast. She said cheap food is expensive, because you will pay for it later on somewhere down the road. And you look at all of our elders. I have quite a few elders, and I see people all the time who are up in age. A lot of them can't walk. A lot of them are on 10, 15 pills, excuse me, on drugs. And cheap food is expensive, and it's an accumulation of the things that we do over time that define us in the long run. If you're constantly drinking Kool-Aid, if you're constantly drinking sodas, if you are constantly eating at McDonald's, it's an accumulation over time, and it's just a matter of time before something happens. I just firmly believe that we were designed to live a very long time and to live, to be limber, to live, to have a vigorous life for a very long time. But I think what happens with a lot of people is they get stalled out by food. And one of the quotes that always sticks with me is this Hippocrates, and he says, "Let thy food be thy medicine, and let thy medicine be thy food." And I mentioned that on a lot of teleconferences. You mentioned that on your webinar, and it's true. You have to let your food be your medicine. I mean, I look at YouTube sometimes, and I come on videos. I saw a lady, I think she's 70 years old, and she's a bodybuilder. She looks great. You see it all the time. You see people who are defying the odds, so to speak. So what makes me different? What makes other people different? I think what kind of defines a lot of people is the commitment. Are you committed into being healthy? Are you committed to eating better and all of this stuff? Because I know I made that commitment a long, long time ago. And a lot of people are always half-heartedly committed to something. You know, we can commit to marriage, but we can't commit to eating a salad.
Hold on a minute. I would definitely retract that comment, because many people aren't committed to marriage, because I think that you made a statement earlier about we want things fast and easy, and relationships aren't easy. So, and I think it's over 50% now of marriages end in divorce. So because they're not easy, people go. And so I think marriages are also fast and easy.
Yeah, but in the beginning, people do commit to that. So they can commit.
In the beginning.
Yeah,
exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm so committed to losing weight, and then you know, 98% of diets end in failure anyway. But I think divorce rates are getting close to that too. Now, Darren, you said something about food and our evolution, and how, you know, you were talking about how man is gotten to the point where what was the quote that you said, where you said that we're feeding our own disease or something like that? You've mentioned that quote before. But
yeah, we've become victims of food.
Yeah, I love that one. We've become victims of food. So I heard something on a podcast today. It was actually my second podcast I listened to while I was getting ready in the morning. that there's like 70,000 animal species in the wild, and we are the only ones that don't eat real food. I mean, of course, if we have domestic dogs and things like that, that's a whole separate issue. We're feeding them the same junk that we are, and we're seeing the same diseases in dogs and things like that, that, you know, for God's sake, the dog we have here, we give them an adrenal pill, like once a month, an adrenal shot, because she has Addison's disease. Like, a dog that has Addison's disease, like, we actually can diagnose these things on dogs. Why is that? Because we're feeding dogs fake food, too. So we're the only species that has tried to trick Mother Nature. I know one of the things that I wanted to go over with you tonight that you're really passionate about is tricking Mother Nature. So why do you believe that we can't fool Mother Nature?
We just can't. I mean, look at how many times we've gone against Mother Nature. Like, if you look at in the old days, and a lot of people don't notice that McDonald's used to fry their french fries in beef tallow. And now all of a sudden, we've switched to vegetable oils. I did a lecture a while back, it's probably like a year ago, and I pulled a chart, and I wish, you know, people could see that chart right now, but I pulled that chart. And on that chart, it kind of, you can kind of see where the introduction of vegetable oils correlated with the first myocardial infraction, which is what the medical term for a heart attack. So on that, they correlated that with the releasing of vegetable oils. Every time I go in the grocery store to pick up something, sometimes I go to just pick up something real quick, I see somebody with Wesson oil or corn oil or something like that, because they've been told that this stuff is heart healthy. Well, what's heart healthy about? How can you take a piece of corn and squeeze oil out of it? Just think about that for a minute. You can't. You have to put it under pressure. You have to deodorize. You have to take it through all kind of chemical processes in order to make oil. So what's natural about that? Whereas beef tallow just comes from the animal. It's natural from the animal, from a cow. Or if you've ever cooked lamb, the tallow that comes from the lamb, you can use that. I remember when my grandmother used to cook things in bacon grease, you know? So it's nothing's natural about taking a piece of corn and converting it to oil. And if people really knew about that process of how it gets done, by the time it's actually sitting on a shelf, it's already rancid. It's not even good oil anymore. And you're taking that and putting that into your body. And that's the actual thing that's causing heart disease. But getting back to the question, is the reason why I said that is because we've become so smart that we've become dumb, Diane. We found a way to shortcut everything. We found a way to make everything in a lab. But yet we're doing this at the expense of our own health. All of these chemists and all these people who are finding ways to shortcut Mother Nature, we're doing it at our own risk, because we're just, again, become too smart, and we're taking a very, very, very bad risk with the stuff that we're doing. Now, everybody wants everything fast and easy. Nobody wants to cook anymore.
Yeah.
And that's what's bringing a lot of people downhill. And I can tell you, I know it gets hard. I get up every morning, and before I go to work, I have to cook. And there's someone, I'm like, man, I don't feel like cooking. But then I think about, what's the option? Do I go to Subway? Because we got one Subway where I work, in a Chinese restaurant. Ain't no telling what the hell you're getting at a Chinese restaurant. So I'm not taking...
Subway?
And we have a... Yeah, we have a Subway and we have a Chinese restaurant, and there's no telling what the hell you're getting at a Chinese restaurant. So,
you know what, Karen, hold on a minute. Because I wanted to ask you, too, how often you do eat out, because a lot of people would think that one dude who was super fat before and now lost a lot of weight, Jared, he put Subway on the map. Subway, eat fresh. Is there anything fresh about that? Because it's all this... quote unquote vegetables wrapped around a big pile of gluten. I know that you had at one point came to the realization that you don't tolerate gluten well. So let's get into that. Do you eat out? Do you eat gluten? Do you eat organic? Like, what's your thing?
No. When I go out to eat, I put my waiter or waitress through pure hell, because I ask about everything.
Yeah.
Hey, what? Yeah, I'm like, what's in this? What's in that? Hey, do you have a dedicated fryer? We were going to this place that we were like before during the Miami Heat during the playoffs. Here we would go to this place and get wings, and I just asked. I was like, okay, do you guys? We asked like what sauce, because a lot of people don't know, and a lot of these sauces they have gluten in them, and they put that in there to make the sauce thicker. So I was just asking the waiter, I was like, well, what sauces do you have that have gluten in them? And I'm and just like, I don't know. I was like, can you go back to the chef and ask them? And they went back to the chef and I said, this has gluten in it, this and this doesn't. So we ended up ordering those wings with gluten. But I quit going there because they don't have a dedicated fryer. And what I mean by that is that if you're gluten sensitive and they're still frying something in, like, frying your wings in the same fryer where they've fried wings that they put batter on, then you can get contaminated by gluten. And it was just little funny thing. Like, we did it one time, and I would wake up in the morning with like a little sniffle or something like that. And I was like, we can't go there no more because we do that. And if I do eat out, there's a local place here called Elevation Burger where they sell grass fed beef. And you can get that in a lettuce wrap. You don't actually have to have bread. They wrap it up in lettuce. So that's always good. It's kind of, we can't go to every place, but we kind of pick and choose our spots. There's a local Thai place here where the lady there is authentic Thai, and we've spoken to her. And she says she doesn't have to use gluten in anything in her place. And we'll order out from there sometimes. But, yeah, I mean, I'm just like everybody else. Sometimes I just don't. You know, I come home tired from work, and I don't want to cook. So we just have to kind of pick and choose our spots. And if we do go out, I ask. If we go out to a restaurant, if anything is gluten-free, it's always going to be a salad. But you do have to ask about the dressing, because they do put gluten in dressing as well. But if you're in doubt, ask. And if you're still in doubt, get a salad. That's my rule.
Yeah, I sometimes even bring my own things. Like, I don't even bring, I bring tamari sauce. If I'm going to have sushi, I don't eat soy sauce because soy is GMO and it's got tons of MSG in it. So
yeah,
even Bragg's liquid aminos is still toxic. So
yeah,
what were you going to say?
No, I was saying we're the same way. When we go out, my girlfriend and I, we will bring our own ketchup. we do it all. I know people look at us like we're nuts, but, I mean, we know that we're doing the right thing. We just don't want to get that ketchup with the high fructose corn syrup in it. We just bring our own. If we go to the movies, I have her, like, you know, don't tell anybody this, but I have her smuggle our own little treats in because we don't eat a lot of the crap that sells at the movies. So there's ways around and stuff. You just have to prepare, for that. And I mean,
that's so much work, Darren.
No, it's not. And for people out there, man, I used to be one of the biggest consumers of freaking candy, like M&Ms. Peanut M&Ms used to be my favorite thing, and I don't know how I got off of them, but I just decided to get off of them. I could literally sit down and eat a whole mega bag, that big bag full of M&Ms. And I used to be so addicted to a lot of the crap, you know, pizza, Papa John's pizza, M&Ms. I would just get, my big thing used to be honey buns. I just made up my mind one day and I said, you know what, I'm not eating that crap no more. And I did it.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of a mindset. One day you're like, I'm over it. And then it's not super easy, but it is simple. So I wanted to get into, because we're nearing the end of your podcast here, Darren, but I think it's really important for people to hear some of the background of what got you here, because you had a career where you were hoping to, I'm sure, impart health onto people and make some decent coin working with doctors. Being that you were a pharmaceutical rep for a couple of years, let's start off the end of the show with some of the things that I wanted people to hear with respect to what we think is health right now. When we get sick, when we have a problem, we've always been taught to go to the doctor and to get better, quote unquote. What did you learn in the pharmaceutical industry as a rep that you feel is important for listeners to know?
I think what people need to know first off is that you actually heal yourself. by the time you get to the doctor, you've already gave the doctor your symptoms, and there's a psychological process. There's a process. There's a subconscious thing that that starts happening with us where when we go to a doctor, we already, in our minds, we're already saying that, hey, this doctor's going to give me something, and we believe that that pill he's giving us is actually healing us when it's actually our mind has already started that process. The body is very it's an elite type of thing. Your body is just, you can't put a price on your body. So your body is already telling you, your mind is already telling you, hey, you know, we're going to heal from this. So I think people believe in that pill, and because they believe in that pill, it works. Whatever you believe in will work. And beliefs are just thoughts that we think over. Yeah, and beliefs, and they've done trials with that. With placebos, they're giving people a placebo and giving people the real thing. And the people that have the placebo heal just as well as the people who got the regular pill. And a placebo is just a fake pill for those people out there. But so that tells you right there that your mind actually heals you. So people need to, you know, be cognizant of that and really realize that you're healing yourself. Now, to get in what I learned in the pharmaceutical industry, and this is something that I'm, you know, want to impart on everybody, and if you have not, just go. There's a free report I offer on my blog. It's called Between Two Thieves, How Big Food and Big Pharma Are Robbing You of Your Health, and I explain a little bit in that, and it's an audio report. You can listen to that. But in that report, I explain to you, and these are a couple of things I'm going to pull out of there and let you know about. People don't know this, that there's a revolving door going on between the pharmaceutical companies and the FDA. So FDA is the Federal Drug Administration. So what happens with a lot of people, and again, Google it, get a book, read it. This is not something that I'm making up just to startle people or to get that wow factor. This is true. If you go on and you look at this revolving door, you have people that go and they work for the FDA. Then they go out of the FDA, and then they go to Johnson & Johnson, and they work for them. Then they said, okay, I'm tired of working for Johnson & Johnson. I'm going to go back to the FDA. So, again, we get back to that whole thing of you can't serve two masters. It's like you and I being part of the Colombian drug cartel. We move down Colombia. We ship cocaine up here all the time. And then all of a sudden we say, you know what? We don't want to ship cocaine no more. We want to go work for the DEA. How can you do that? Mm-hmm. The other thing that people need to know is that when you see a drug on the market, chances are they've only tested that drug on a small percentage of the population. So what people need to know is that we have what we call biochemical individuality. That means that I'm different from you, Diane. You're different from what's your friend's name? Ashley, that did the podcast with us. You're different. So to put that in perspective, and this is something that people don't know, you did your food sensitivity test and you found out that you were sensitive to ibuprofen. That's a painkiller. So let's say that you're sensitive, it brings on a little slight reaction to you, whereas Ashley might take that same medication and Ashley could end up having a severe reaction that may even cause her to die. So it's not, drugs work differently among different people. And believe this or not, they already know the statistics of how many people are going to die before these drugs are actually placed on the market. Now, the next thing is, it's not up to the FDA to prove that a drug is good. It's up to the pharmaceutical company to prove that the drug is good. It's up to the pharmaceutical company to submit tests to the FDA saying, okay, our drug is good. It's something that's not going to hurt the population, and we want to put it on the market. So what they do is they hire a so-called independent lab. That independent lab, their funding depends on the funding that they get from the pharmaceutical company. So that's like saying, okay, I'm going to give you the money to do all the tests on my drugs, but you better not come back with nothing that says my drug isn't good, right? Unless you're not going to get any of our repeat money. you're not going to get any more money. So if I do find something that's bad about your drug, why would I tell that? And there are many cases of this going on where they, you know, found things where drugs wasn't good. I can think of right now, what's the sweetener out there? They knew Splenda wasn't a good sweetener, and Splenda, all of those sweeteners, they knew that this wasn't good. Donald Rumsfeld was behind that, for those of you, and they got it put on the market anyway. Now you see a lot of people still using Splenda, still coming down with all these symptoms and don't know, you know, what's going on. But that's a prime example of the fact that, you know, these guys are fudging these tests, these research tests, and then they take it to the FDA. The FDA say, oh, okay, well, hey, we saw that this is good. Let's go ahead and just throw this on the market. So we really don't have anybody out there that's looking out for us other than ourselves. And here's another example. I'm going to hit a home run here and bring it home. Right now, we have the head of the FDA, director of the FDA, which is a guy named Michael Taylor. Michael Taylor used to be a lawyer for Monsanto. Monsanto is the people behind all these GMO crops. Now, this guy is the head of the FDA, Food and Drug Administration. There's no wonder why we can't get GMO crops or GMO products.
What are GMOs?
Genetically modified organisms. So most of the corn now is genetically modified. They're trying to put salmon on the market as genetically modified. You have a lot of genetically modified vegetables, and the big one is corn. But so Michael Taylor, again, another example of serving two masters. He's the head of the FDA now, whereas he used to work for the evil empire, which I call Monsanto. They're all these engineering foods and all of this stuff. Our bodies are not made to take this kind of stuff. Our bodies know natural stuff. You don't see dogs going out eating potato chips. You know what I'm saying?
Unless their master feeds it to them.
Yeah, unless
the same way that the FDA is our master that feeds us the food pyramid.
Yeah, so I mean, you would never see a dog eating an ice cream cone. It just ain't gonna happen, you know. So people have to realize that is that, you know, a lot of this stuff that we're eating now is not natural. It's not what nature intended for us to eat. And you see the symptoms. You can go. I just went to the beach. You know, last weekend, and you know, I don't make fun of people's body, but you can see you see it all the time. I saw a guy, his you know, belly is just as round as a basketball. It looked like he was about 9 months pregnant. And yeah. I'm not saying that to make fun of anybody. I'm just saying that you see the results of the things that we're eating, and people think that this stuff is just perfectly normal. I get old. I'm supposed to get a pot belly. I'm supposed to not have energy. I'm just supposed to be able to lay down and not do anything. But meanwhile, right there on the beach, you're seeing them with coolers full of sodas, Doritos, what else? Taco Bell, pizza, and all of this stuff. And then people wonder why they are overweight. I can tell you why you're overweight. I've told my girlfriend this plenty of times. I said, take me in the grocery store, blindfold me, and take me to anybody's cart and let me feel around their cart. And if I feel around in your cart enough, I will tell you if you're overweight or not. And 99.9% of the time, you take my blindfold off, I know you're overweight by what you got in your grocery cart.
Let's do that. Let's do that one day, Darren.
Yeah, it's all food. And the startling thing about this is that it's all a relationship. Food makes you sick, the pharmaceutical company got the cure. Food makes you sick, pharmaceutical company has the cure. And it's an inverse relationship. It's a symbiotic relationship that keeps going on and on. The wheel keeps turning. And people need to wake up and realize that you need to break the cycle. Eat real food. That will get you off the pharmaceutical drugs. You know, I know you're not on any prescriptions. I don't take any drugs. I'm 43 years old. I'm not afraid to say that. And it's a compliment to me when people come up to me and say, hey, you don't look 43.
Yeah.
That's a compliment to me. I was like, okay, well, what 43 is supposed to look like? And
yeah, I know. That's exactly.
Yeah. So that's.
I think that there's something that I even noticed about people, and not to make fun of anyone or anything, but it's common to be overweight these days. And I actually you probably agree with me. I see people who are overweight or who maybe I haven't seen for a while and then they've gained some pounds. They actually look like 10 years older when you gain weight. And when people lose weight again, they look so much more youthful. And it's sad that we associate aging with getting fat and feeling more tired because it's just not the way it is.
Yeah, when I gain weight in my face and I gain weight in my butt. In my face, you can tell because I looked a lot older, and I can show you pictures of, you know, in my 30s, I just looked like I was a lot older because I had gained so much weight, and it all, you know, it was all in my cheeks. So, I mean, and there, you can see that all the time on transformation. If you look at transformation pictures, once people lose that weight, they look about 10 years younger. You know, when you have all that weight on you. Yeah, so.
Talk about anti-aging.
Yeah, that's an anti-aging for you right there. Just, you know, commit to, you know, eating better, getting the right foods, getting the right saturated fats into your diet. And, I mean, you will reap the rewards of that whole thing. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I wanted to ask you a few questions to start closing it up. The last question I want to ask you is gender specific because I wanted to ask you, you know, something for men, something for women in particular. But before I get into those last ones, this is one that I love asking to people who are well versed like you are: is when would you fire your doctor? Like, at what point would you know to fire them, to stop working with them, and maybe take things in your own hands, or work with a health practitioner who's more naturopathic in nature?
Yeah. So. For me, man, one of the things that I think when I got into the pharmaceutical industry, I was taught, before I even got into that, I always held doctors in the utmost regard. I was like, these doctors are so smart. They know, you know, everything about the body. But let me tell you, when I started calling on these doctors and talking to them all day, these doctors are just like you and I. You have your A doctors. You have doctors out there that really care and really believe that they're doing the right thing, and they really want to help you, and they're on top of their stuff. And then you have your F doctors. These are doctors that are just going through the motions. They've lost the passion for being a medical professional, and they're just going through the promotions, and they like writing prescriptions. And those are doctors that I loved when I was in the pharmaceutical industry because I could, and I know, and I got paid on how many prescriptions that they wrote. And trust me, I made some good money. But
wait. You got paid based on what?
Based upon the scripts, what they write. So if they write a prescription, I sold antibiotics. They write a script for my antibiotic, and they take it to the pharmacy. The pharmacy has to record that, and we had all this data. We knew the doctors that were prescribing the most antibiotics. We knew the doctors that weren't prescribing as many of our antibiotics. So we would target those doctors who's going to say, hey, you know, doc, why are you not doing my antibiotic? Blah, here's some free samples. Let me give you some free samples. But and that's how you work the system. And there's a lot more into this, and I don't want to go into that because I know we're creeping up on time now. But the thing you have to realize is that if your doctor is not open, if you go into your doctor and your doctor is not open to hear what you have to say, most people go into a doctor's office blind. They don't know anything. They just believe everything the doctor says. But if you go into the office and you're educated and you start talking to your doctor and your doc, and I know a lot of doctors like this because when I used to call on them and I would challenge them and I'd be like, okay, well, why are you prescribing this when you could be prescribing this? And you could see them visually get mad, like, why is this dude talking to me about, you know, what I prescribe, and I know what I prescribe, and I'm prescribing the same drug for years, and I know that this works, and I don't know about this. So if you go into your doctor as an educated patient and your doctor just doesn't have that time for you, or you keep going in there and he can't do anything for you, he said, okay, well, let me titrate this drug for you. Let's go down on your dosage. Let's up your dosage. Let's do this. And you don't get any answers, because when I go to the doctor, I ask them everything. Just like when I get out of my food, I was like, oh, I had a doctor that wanted to put me on Lipitor for cholesterol. This was way back when. And this is before I knew what I know about cholesterol now. I said, nope. I said, I will eat oatmeal until it comes out my ears before I let you put me on Lipitor. And I walked out of his office. And I never went back to see him again after that. Because
voted.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's nothing wrong with you getting, and I did the same thing when I had the problem with my knees, which I told on your webinar. I got three opinions. The first doctor wanted me to get surgery. The second doctor wanted me to get surgery. The third doctor sent me in for an MRI and come to find out I had arthritis. Now, if I had listened to the first doctor, I would have had a needless surgery, paying the money out of my pocket. My insurance probably would have paid a little. I would have had to pay, you know, the deductible or whatever, or make up the amount. But I just, something clicked in me and said, no, get a couple of opinions. And I found out that I had arthritis. And most people take a diagnosis. They take one diagnosis. And here's an example. There's a lady, and it's on the internet, that was falsely diagnosed with cancer. She went through chemo and all of this stuff. Had she gone and got a second opinion, they might have told her, even a third opinion, they may have told her that you don't have cancer. So she went through a lot of needless chemotherapy only to find out that she didn't have cancer. And it was done by an incompetent doctor. And some doctors are incompetent. People have to realize that you have doctors that are sitting in the ER all night, and I used to call on them, and they have been up since 7 o'clock the last morning, the morning before last, and they're still in the ER because they're on a shift. You think these people are not going to make mistakes? They get tired just like we get tired, and they make mistakes just like we make mistakes. So the thing is that if you're going in and your doctor doesn't want to answer your questions, or you feel like they don't have time for you, fire the ass and go to somebody else that does have time for you. Or if you can, go to an alternative physician who can spend more time with you learning about what's going on with your body and get to the root cause of what's going on.
Yeah, amen. And specifically, for men and women, and this will be my last question for you, and we'll start to wrap it up, wrap up this amazing show. There's two things with men and women I wanted to find out. Like, for men, what do you think they need to do to catch up when it comes to health? And then for women, what's the trick being played on them when it comes to health?
Yeah, I'll take that first one first. With men, I think men need to care more about their health. I was working on a product, and this was way back when, and I kind of quit working on it, but I'm actually going to bring it out a little bit later. I just didn't think that people were ready for it. But all the research I did on this product on my market, everything that I researched, it was always saying women 40 to 45, women 50 to 55. There was not one thing that I researched where men were popping up as someone who was researching this and wanting to know about their health. And for men, I think that something has to dang near fall off fall off, or we got to get hit with a ton of bricks before we actually go into a doctor or alternative, you know, some type of alternative care medical professional, because we have this ego thing that we think that we are invincible. And I'll take this for example. Like, I hurt my back deadlifting, and I told you about this. I hurt my back deadlifting, and it was my girlfriend who convinced me to take a week off. So I was like, no, I can't take a week off. I got to get in the gym. You know, I don't want to, you know, get out of shape and, you know, get my lifts go down, my poundage on my lifts go down. And she said, take a week off. So I took a week off. I iced my back. I took last week off, went into the gym Tuesday, and I felt fine. I felt fine. So with men, and I just use myself as an example, with men, I think that we need to just start taking better care of ourselves and not being afraid. Don't push yourself to say, okay, well, I know, you know, my arm's about to fall off, but, you know, I'm going to go into work today and make this thing happen. Because you get one life, and once that's gone, it's gone. You can't come back. Ain't nobody resurrecting you from the grave like Frankenstein. You dead. You're dead. Yeah, you're done. That's it. So you got to take care of everything now. Now, with women, I think that there's a grave disservice being played on women, and here's the reason why. With a man, if a man goes into some place and there's something going wrong with him from a sexual standpoint, nowhere in any the history, and I'm going to use some terms here, does a doctor look at a man and say, hey, we want to cut your penis off, or hey, we want to cut your testicles, your balls off. But when women go to a gynecologist, what happens with these women is that the guy say, okay, well, you're having this problem. We want to cut your uterus out. We want to get you give you a hysterectomy. We want to give you a hysterectomy because we might think that it's cancerous. And I read this book called The Hysterectomy Hoax. It was done by a doctor, and I tried to get him on the show, and he has since retired. If you want to pick that book up, read the book. He wrote it, Hysterectomy Hoax. And in that book, he explained the fact that a lot of doctors will go in and do a hysterectomy because it's easier. If a woman comes in with endometriosis or a woman comes in with fibroids, there's some work to be done. I mean, you can do some work with that. With fibroids, they have a process called a myomectomy, which you go in and you take those individual growths out, and then women can end up having kids. They can end up functioning normally. But he said, with most doctors, and I've seen this because I'm in the pharmaceutical industry, most doctors are not competent enough to go in and do the surgery, or they're lazy and they don't want to go in and do the surgery. So it's easy just to go in and rip a woman's uterus out and call it a day. And for most women, when they do get a hysterectomy, that's it. You've lost your desire for sex with most women, and you're no more used to nature. So believe it or not, when you're no more used to nature, something happens from a biological standpoint. I'm not going to say, you know, what it is. You just make your own conclusion from that. But there's no way that women should go in and without, again, getting first, second, third opinions before they go in and allow some incompetent surgeon who just wants to make money. And doctors, surgeons do make money for surgery. So if they get you into a surgery, they're making extra money for that, to where they are telling you that, okay, let's just take your uterus out. Let's just take your sexual organs out, and you don't have to worry about anything. And they don't do that to men. They don't go in and tell men that, you know, let's cut your penis off or cut your balls off. And I think that it's a disservice to men. I think it's a trick that's being played on women. And everything affects women from, if we look at an estrogen standpoint, when women get older, they lose estrogen. That's why it's called menopause, because actually you're turning into a man, menopause. So if you start to have that too much estrogen in your body or not enough estrogen, again, there are conditions that come with that. But when you do have too much estrogen, and we really live in an estrogen-dominated society right now, and it's really playing a part on our women, because women are showing these signs. Women are the ones that have the problems losing the weight. Women are the ones that are having the problems, you know, all kind of other health problems. And it's because we're living in this estrogen-dominant society with antibiotics, hormones in our food, the cosmetics that women are using. They're putting on, I don't know, umpteen chemicals when they put on makeup in the morning, if you've not switched to an organic beauty routine. So I just think that there's a disservice out there to women, and no one is really telling them the truth. We're all just trying to say, okay, well, let's do some surgery on you. No, what about before you do surgery, let's do some hormone tests. Let's find out what's going on with you, with your hormones, because most women's hormones are out of whack. You know, women go through more hormonal episodes than men do. First, it's puberty. Then it's when you have a child, it's pregnancy, your hormones go haywire then. Then it's perimenopause, and then it's menopause. So there's so many different hormonal episodes that a woman goes through, and most of the time, because we're ingesting all of these chemicals and different things right now, that most of our young women, our teens, they're already jacked up by the time they get to be an adult, because they, you know, drinking milk with hormones, you know, they're eating all of these foods from Taco Bell and all this other crap. So they're already jacked up hormone wise. And then they get into an adult, and then bam, here comes the weight. You know, the weight starts piling on and on and on. Then they might become pregnant. And then if they become pregnant after that, then the weight starts piling on again if they haven't gained weight before that period. Then they go into menopause, then start gaining more weight. And this it doesn't have to happen. You know this, Diane. It doesn't really have to happen. It's just that I don't understand why in our Western medicine we are so apt to prescribe antidepressant drugs for women when it doesn't need to be that way. why don't we go into a doctor? You go into your regular doctor and say, hey, you know what? You're having a problem losing weight. What's your thyroid? Let's check your thyroid. Oh, are your adrenals, you know, in check? And then also, let's check your hormone levels. Maybe, you know, you have too much estrogen in your system. Maybe something's going on. But what we've been taught to do is, and especially women, is beat yourself to death with exercise. Beat yourself to death with exercise. If that doesn't work, then there's something wrong with you. And I just think it's a big disservice that we know this stuff. Alternative practitioners know this stuff. But we have the majority of what people are going to, medical doctors, DOs, and people like this, they don't know. They don't know. And that's why I think there's a trick that's being played on women.
Yeah, and as a woman myself, having been through the ringer on a lot of different things with respect to the disrespect of our parts, you lose that and you lose pretty much your womanhood. And I have many, many clients in my practice who have had that procedure done on them, and many, many, and they actually say that over 70% of hysterectomies could have been prevented. And that's a huge number when you really consider 7 out of 10 women who have had their uterus cut out didn't need to have it cut out, and it's very, very sad. So I'm glad that you mentioned that, you know, coming out as a man and saying that we're being disrespected means a lot. As a woman, just for me to say this here on this podcast, so any women listening, you should give Darren a big old virtual hug and definitely continue to follow him, because this is the reason why he's imparting all of this information with all of his podcasts, his radio show every week, because this information is very powerful. So, Darren, let's start wrapping it up, because this is your show, man, and I'm just having fun with you tonight. So I think that we're coming to the end here, and I don't know how else you could top that by just saying that you're amazing. And I'm so glad that we're friends.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm actually glad that we met, and we kind of, you know, are very good at playing off each other on the podcast. And you're very knowledgeable. You've taught me some things as well. So we'll wrap up. For those of you out there, help me build my community. If you're listening to this, help me build a community. Go to Fat Man Radio Show. It's on Facebook, and like my fan page. I'm really trying to build that. If you haven't visited my blog, go to the blog, visit that. It's called imthefatman.com, exactly like it sounds. I like ignition, M like Mary, the Fat Man, and that's phat.com. And I just posted a really good article on celebrity endorsements and why I don't want to be like Mike anymore, but I might want to be like Kobe. Go in there and look at that and make some comments on that, man. I think that we tend to be spectators in our life, and people are scared to get out there in the forefront and just get active in their life and make comments and stir the pot and ask questions. And you need to do that. You need to do that if you're really serious about your health. And there's a lot of amazing people out here that I follow that inspired me to jump into this health and wellness thing, and people that I continuously learn from. I met Diane, and we do the Wellness Warrior radio podcast, and that's on iTunes. So you can listen to those things, and I'm sure Diane is going to be doing some more things. I think, Diane, you're also starting your own show. So, stay tuned for that, and I will certainly advertise that on my Facebook fan page and help you out wherever I can, because I just think that we need more wellness warriors out there. We need more people out there to combat the lies. We need more truth out there and people that are willing to tell the truth. So, again, thank you for listening to the show. And next week I'm actually waiting on somebody to confirm, but I have some good shows coming up. I'm waiting on Leanne Ellington to confirm. She was a boot camp owner. I don't know if she sold her boot camp, but she witnessed an evolution as far as her weight, and she went and she lost a lot of weight, but realized that there were some things that she was kind of still holding on to. So I'm waiting for her to confirm for next week. The week after that, I have Frida, and I'm going to pronounce Frida's name. I don't know if it's right or wrong or what. Frida Mooncotch. And Frida has a great ebook called Defying Age with Food. She's in her 40s. I've seen some of her pictures. She actually looks good on those pictures. And she was someone that was sick, and she used food as a way to regain her health and also to look younger. The next week I have Roberta Ruggiero, and I'm not sure if I'm announcing her name right, but this is something that is really important. Is she founded a chapter for hypoglycemia. Hypoglycemia is actually low blood sugar. So she will be coming on to talk. She was actually diagnosed with low blood sugar later on in her life, but before that, she spent time in a mental institution. I spoke with her the other day. She spent time in a mental institution because they couldn't figure out what was wrong with her, and they did a simple glucose test and found out that she had hypoglycemia. And hypoglycemia, again, is low blood sugar, and it can, if you have low blood sugar, you can have symptoms like aggressiveness, you not be able to think. It's all kind of things that are connected. And one of the weird things I think is connected with hypoglycemia is the fact that a lot of alcoholics are hypoglycemic, meaning that they're using the alcohol to raise their blood sugar up. And most of the time, when you treat hypoglycemia, the alcoholism will disperse. It will go away. And that's, I mean, I was astounded by that when I read that. But she'll be on October 24th to talk about hypoglycemia. So got some good people coming up. I'm working on some more people, and I'm going to continue doing this just to give you information that you can use, whether you are trying to lose weight or whether you just want to be all around healthy. So again, thank you for listening. Diane, thank you so much for being on the show tonight and serving as the host. And this has been another episode of Fat Man Radio. I'll see you next week at the same fat time and on the same fat channel. Good night.